Hello, you're with Australia Talks here on ABC Radio National, Radio Australia, and online at abc.net.au/rn. Paul Barclay with you. Happy Australia Day. Hope you're having a great day off. I suspect a few of you will be celebrating with a drink or two, maybe at your local pub, in fact. The Aussie Hotel has long been a part of Australian culture, but in an era of gentrification, of upmarket wine bars, the proliferation of pokies into pubs, is its role changing? Has the Aussie pub changed? Is it still a place where local communities come together? Love to hear what you think. Call now, 1300 22 55 76. If you're in a pub listening on the radio or you've got your mobile phone handy, that'll do. Love to hear your views. You can also post them online on our comments page. Just search ABC Australia Talks and post your views on the great Aussie pub and how it's changed over the years. Let me introduce you to our panel of guests for today. Dr. Tanya Luckins is a historian from the Australian Centre at the University of Melbourne and co-author of a new book, The Australian Pub. Charles Pickett is a curator of design and the built environment at the Powerhouse Museum in Ultimo in Sydney, and publican Tom Maguire is with us as well. He's the Queensland Hotels Association President and indeed a former Australian Hotels Association President. And Tom, it's not very often we get a publican in on the program, so welcome.
Well, happy Australia Day, Paul. Happy to be here.
This is, I suppose, an important time, particularly in Queensland, for local communities as they come together after a terrible event, a natural disaster. I'm wondering, as a result of the floods, have pubs become a bit of a meeting place, a bit of a community gathering place for people to come, maybe have a drink or two, talk about their problems, plan the road ahead?
Paul, they've always been that way. Times like that we've gone through recently probably accentuated, but traditionally we are places where people come and mix and celebrate and commiserate and go through life's trials and tribulations. And I think that's been the way, well, ever since I was a boy and long before me, and it'll continue to be the same case.
It certainly was traditionally the case, but I would have thought the role of the pub has changed a bit, but you're saying it still does fulfil that role?
Yeah, the role's still the same. It's just we are achieving it in different guises now. Years ago, going back 50 years, possibly most of our patrons were all male. If you went into a pub, it was a male bastion. Now it's equally divided, male and female. You know, and once again, of a whole range of ages, and so they're still talking possibly about the same things that concerned them all those years ago, but possibly just wearing different clothing with an iPod or an iPad or something like that.
Yes, I mentioned the floods, and I should point out that here at the ABC and Radio National, we're treating today not just as Australia Day, but as Help Australia Day, and if Australia Day is a day about celebrating what it means to be Australian, then I reckon the spirit of lending a hand is what it's all about. There's been fires in the west, there's floods affecting Victoria, a massive clean-up, a long clean-up, an expensive one needed in New South Wales and Queensland. You can help out by making a donation to just help out those who have been affected by these terrible events. You can head to the website, our website, at Australia Talks, abc.net.au/rn/Australia Talks, and it'll point you to ways in which you can help by donating both money or your time and labour. A variety of organisations that can help you out, just go to the website and you'll find out more about that. So, Tom, the pub is still a central place in which socialising goes on, even though the forms of entertainment that pubs are offering have changed quite a bit over the years?
Yeah, that's true. Possibly our traditional view of a hotel or of a pub is still the same out in the country, in the bush. It's been very important in places where there is communities that are isolated. And so when people come in, they traditionally go to the pub. Mm. And I think when we go back over to those tragic bushfires in Victoria a few years back, you know, you could see that the communities were, in a lot of cases, hovering around their hotel, which may have been the last thing standing in some cases, but it became sort of the focal point to continue on. And I noticed in the floods up at Rockhampton, the fellow there from the Fitzroy Hotel he'd only been there 3 weeks, but he was alive and floating there and serving the community, which was great.
Yeah, funnily enough, I was having a drink at that very pub not long ago. We at Australia Talks were doing a broadcast out of Rockhampton, had a beer in the Fitzroy Hotel. Look, Tanya Luckins, if I can bring you into the discussion, do you agree with Tom that the Aussie pub does still play the same role in our social lives as it always did?
Well, I think Tom's right, and the Queensland and Victorian floods and the bushfires from a couple of years ago are evidence of that. People tend to gravitate towards the pub when the community needs to come together. They go to the pub in time for information, they go to the pub for memorial services, and even more everyday mundane things to eat, to get drinks and refreshments. I mean, it's a fundamental part of every people's lives.
And I will talk a bit more about the eating part of it, because that's something that has changed in pubs over the years. The quality of tucker that you get these days can be very fine indeed at many hotels. But what is it, Tanya, about the local pub that does appeal to us in particular as Australians, would you say?
Well, I think it's interesting that we're talking about the pub and not the hotel. And I think the word pub, you know, somewhat sums up what we think about the pub. It's the local focus of the community. It's the local. You go there for conversation, to meet your friends, for the meat and chook raffle, all those types of things. And when you think about the hotel, you think about something different, I think. You think about a big place, you think about tourism, you think about accommodation. It's somewhat different, I think.
And does it relate at all to the notion of the English public house, the very much the local pub on the corner that you more often than not walked to, and that really still exists to some extent in that form today? For example, if you live in England and you want to go and watch the local football game on TV, unless you've got pay TV, you have to go to the pub to watch it. And it struck me when I was there not that long ago that it still does very much work along those lines of the place where locals get together. Is that the same as it is in Australia?
I think so. I think you're right there. I think the idea of the local is a very British idea. Although historically in Australia, I think you can see some differences. I mean, the Australian public house as such was different in the 19th century when it came about, in particular the 1830s, where we rolled the alehouse, the tavern and the inn into one entity called the public house. And I think that's somewhat distinctive in Australia, where we had to provide accommodation, refreshments and food and dining all at the same time. That was a bit different to England, where you still had the separation. So I think historically you can tease out a few things.
Charles Pickett, for a long time pubs were central to the Australian character. Songs, of course, were written about the pub. Slim Dusty penning one of the most well-known, perhaps, songs in Australian history, The Pub That Ran Out of Beer. Is it still the case that they are central to Australian character, Australian life?
Look, I'd say at the moment they're probably more central than they ever have been.
Really?
I mean, as Tom said earlier on, for a long time they weren't particularly inclusive institutions, you know, the most obvious case being that for most of the 20th century, you know, women were not particularly welcome, certainly in the public bar part of hotels. And that was partly, you know, that was true for a lot of reasons, one of which was that the hotel industry had pretty close to a monopoly on the sale of beer and other types of alcohol. So it's only really been, you know, in the last few decades that they've really had to go out and compete with clubs and restaurants and, you know, other types of venues, different sorts of bars, etc. And so they've had to, you know, reach out, you know, to different demographics, different sorts of people, in a way that they didn't really used to have to do, generally.
Mm, yeah.
And so I think we're in a really interesting period. I must say I'm a bit cynical about this notion of, you know,
the Aussie pub.
The Aussie pub being everyone's meeting place. You know, even when I was a kid, it certainly wasn't. You know, and I think one of the things that is most interesting about pubs is that they've They've never been that really perfect fit with society generally. They've always been a bit on the fringe and a huge source of controversy. And, of course, they still are for all sorts of reasons, the whole thing around binge drinking, etc.
Yes.
It's sort of come back, the sort of arguments we used to have with the temperance movement.
Which we won't talk about today because it really is worthy of an entire program.
Just using that as an example.
Just signalling to people who do want to talk about this issue. We have talked about it in the past. We'll talk about it again, but not tonight. But if Tom Maguire, just that issue, actually, that Charles raised there about... when pubs lost their monopoly over places to serve alcohol, and it was really when some of the smaller restaurants were able to then serve beer and wine without serving a meal, and in a way they became de facto mini bars and mini pubs, and people could go there to have a drink rather than just going to the pub. Did that force pubs to rethink how they operated?
Oh, it definitely did. I can remember as a kid, I'd get off the tram up at Paddington, and we used to live on top of the pub there, and I'd get out, and there was the typical big round public bar with the tiles up the walls, and I'd get off the tram and go into the pub, and I'd walk down a little alleyway, and there was a lovely little room there called the Ladies' Parlour, and that was the place the only place where women would go in that hotel, and I'd go upstairs, there'd be ladies there shelling peas for dinner. You know, they'd be doing that sort of stuff. Mm. So then the situation changed and restaurants came along, and then, you know, and liquor laws diversified it. And so we had to, as an industry, keep up.
Yeah.
Change necessitates some really forward thinking in the end, because if you don't... time will leave you behind.
It's a fine line, though, isn't it, that notion of change, of modifying the old pub, which is seen to be out of step with the times, giving it a renovation, spending a whole lot of money, and then all of a sudden you've lost something special in some cases. I won't mention a couple of the pubs around where I live that I just feel were better, actually, before they were renovated. But it's, you know, you've got to move with the times on the one hand, but you can destroy the character on the other.
You live by the sword and die by the sword in the same way. The fact is, the reason that you have changed or renovated your hotel is basically you've looked at your sales and the customer isn't coming.
Yeah.
So the customer's voting to go down the road for some other, for whatever that reason is, and if you don't change, you're going to be left behind. And as part of that, you do lose some of your great memories of what that hotel used to be like.
Yep. Tanya Luckins, are they still pretty blokey places, the local pub?
They're not as blokey as they once were, let's put it that way. And I think women would be very thankful of that. I mean, during that era of the 6 o'clock swirl, women really didn't like going to the public bar. And indeed, it may still be the case, because women had to go to the ladies' parlour, or the ladies' lounge, as it was always called, where you didn't in fact have your own little bar there. The barman or barmaid served your shandy through a little servery, shut the door, and the women were left in there to have the shandy with their ciggy. So they knocked down the walls after the end of 6 o'clock closing, and pubs opened up a lot. More women started going to the pub as a result. I don't think it's as blokey as it once was. If you can put up with... football, which a lot of women like, horse racing too. So I think it's a lot of give and take as well. Hmm. The pub changes to accommodate its clientele and changing social needs too.
We'll flesh that out in a moment, Tanya. We're talking about the role of the Australian hotel in contemporary Australian life. Has it changed? Pokies are one way that the pub has changed, for better or ill, depending on your position. 1300 22 55 76 is the number. Love your views on how pubs have changed and whether or not you still get along to them. Give us a call or post your views online on our webpage, abc.net.au/rn/AustraliaTalks. Bob from Armidale's got a view on the pub. G'day, Bob.
Oh, hello, Paul. Look, I feel with hotels and so on, you get so much comment by people, I wonder whether they're drinkers at all. I was a paper boy when I first went into pubs at 9 or 10, and now I'm 65, and I still go about twice a week. And I remember what was said just about the women in the hotel. Well, definitely the paper boy trade dropped off enormously once they were opened to women in general. You couldn't move in those rooms in the back. the suicide specials, as they used to be nicknamed, the girls or the women who used to drink in there all the day with Pim's number one and the aspirins and that sort of thing, they dispersed and very few women came in. The same thing happened in the Journalist Club when it was open to women. These days, it's a different thing altogether. The big thing to me that changed things was the clubs, and the heritage of that today is the buses that run people all over the place to beat the RBT. But the RBT is the main thing. Now, I live in a country town of Armidale, and it is the most peculiar situation where there are quite a few hotels shut on a Sunday when you think there'd be a good traffic. And the other thing is, during the day, there are very few drinkers in the hotels. They live on two or three things which send you crackers, is the gambling and the jukebox, which comes up on the screen, and the idea conversation and location is lost pretty well because...
Look, you've raised a whole lot of good issues there. I think that the jukebox on the screen you're referring to, the karaoke that occurs in some pubs, and also pokies, which we will talk about, the role of pokies in hotels, and the random breath test and how that really did change the ball game when that was introduced across the country. We'll take a look at all of that as we progress through our discussion on the history of the pub in our culture. Let's go to Beth in Melbourne, who wants to talk a bit about being a woman in a pub in the 60s and the price you paid for that, Beth.
Oh, yes, Paul. It was actually the 70s.
The 70s, really?
The 70s in Melbourne. A group of women following a couple of women trying to be served in a public bar and being refused, about 30 of us went back to that public bar in Nicholson Street in Fitzroy in Melbourne, the Polaris Inn it was known as. It's now apartments. Yeah. It's gone the way of a few corner pubs, I guess.
Unfortunately.
And ultimately, 16 of us were arrested and locked up in a bluestone cell at the City Watch House. And
arrested because you weren't permitted to be in the public bar?
Well, we were ultimately charged with refusing to leave a licensed premises when asked by the licensee to do so.
Right.
He didn't actually ever ask any of us to leave, I don't think. The police asked us to leave and
Was this a sort of political protest on your part?
It was a women's liberation action, really. And, yes, so 16 of us were ultimately arrested for, you know, going back into the pub after the police, you know, threw us out one door and we went back in another. Eventually a number of us were arrested and sort of held through most of the night and charged and eventually convicted.
What, really?
Yes. I recently, it was a bit of an issue for me as a nurse with new changes to the law for registration of health practitioners in Australia. I had to disclose my criminal history to the registration board. And sort of wait and see. Yeah, in fact, the hospital that I was working in as a student at the time were very good and changed my roster to allow me to go to, you know, court hearings and so on.
Gee, that takes us back, Beth. And thanks very much for reminding us of
1974.
1974. Tanya Luckins, it was a different time back then, certainly, and as we've just heard from Beth, perhaps just remind us of how it all changed, really, and what the impetus was for that change when women were therefore allowed into the public bars of hotels where previously they were banned.
Well, it's interesting to hear about Beth's reminiscences because I read about it in the Melbourne newspapers. It was front page news, that Polaris incident, and back in, I think it was 72. And they were considered very radical, these women going and daring to be in the public bar. And challenging the men and challenging the publican and hence the police to kick them out. It just wasn't the done thing. I mean, it was a social thing rather than a legal thing. Women were actually allowed in there, but nobody wanted them in there. Mm. And so wanting to go into the male bastion was a really important thing to do. And it wasn't because they actually, I guess, wanted to be in there and breast the bar necessarily, but just to prove that they were actually being excluded and to break down that gender segregation. I mean, the pub was one of those key sites of gender segregation in Australian history.
And there was a very well-known incident in Brisbane, actually, of a well-known pub in Brisbane, the Regatta Hotel, where a couple of women chained themselves to the public bar there.
That's right. In 1965, in fact, it was Mel Thornton, Siggy's mum, who was one of the couple of the two women who did it. And seeing Brisbane had, Queensland's got this anomaly in their law where you could actually be in the public bar, but you couldn't be served alcohol. And so they brought in jugs of beer from another pub, another bar, and stood there and chained themselves to the pub, to the rail of the pub. So and the men apparently didn't mind at all. And so it was simply another a publicity type of stunt to make people realise that this is going on. Women have equal rights.
Mm, yep. And just in parenthesis of that story, the Regatta Hotel was one of the pubs that got badly flooded in the recent Brisbane floods, and indeed badly flooded back in 74 when the other big flood swept through Brisbane. We're talking about the history of pubs on Australia Talks. Love your thoughts. 1300 22 55 76. Do you still get along to the pub at all? Are you more likely to maybe go there for a bite to eat or entertainment? Or do you tend to, I don't know, buy alcohol and drink it at home these days? Give us a call, 1300 22 55 76. We'll take some calls shortly. But as pubs have evolved, the kind of entertainment they offer has certainly changed. Our reporter, Karen Zivanovits, went along today to Brisbane's iconic Storybridge Hotel to sample the unique Australia Day entertainment there, which some of you will be familiar with, the cockroach races.
Hang on, the roaches! Together! 3, 2, 1, racing!
The race is on. Nearly 50 cockroaches scatter off an upturned bucket in the middle of the track. The rules are rigid and there's no cheating, says Richard Deary, owner of the Storybridge Hotel.
It's the first cocky over the line, first, second and third. Flying's disqualified. And it's from the centre to the outside track. So very straightforward. There's a few people, a few owners who get a little bit carried away with their own, but there's no actual betting, no. It's more fun of prestige of owning a cockroach and winning the title of each race.
It's bring your own roach or buy one from the hotel's home stable for $5. Especially for the event, purebred cockroaches have been imported from Melbourne. It might not be the race that stops the nation, but training is taken just as seriously.
We have a house stable here which we kept cooled and air conditioning overnight, feed them up on a little bit of beer and that gives them energy. And then the people who bring their own thoroughbreds, they train them in very different ways. Everyone has their own different techniques. Some tie string to them and lead them along and others do very madcap things with training.
Around 8,000 people crowd into the traditional Aussie pub. On ordinary days, it's not nearly so busy. The hotel dynamic has changed a lot over the past 15 years. Richard Deary.
It's a whole social change as well. Entertainment for people is a lot more diverse. People can travel, people go to beaches, theatres, cinemas, restaurants. Now there's so many other choices. So hotels, to be competitive, have to offer a lot more. Their service standards have to pick up. Food, which wasn't a big component, now is a very major component of operations. It offers from counter meals to snacks right through to full a la carte restaurant-style service. And just to keep developing is part of the challenge.
It's not about the drinks anymore. These days, the Storybridge Hotel offers poker and poetry nights, foreign food festivals and live music of all kinds. It takes more effort to keep the patrons coming back.
They just have higher expectations. They themselves have a higher benchmark of what offering they're looking for. And all they look for is an honesty in what's been given. They're just looking for good intentions. So sometimes it's just good service, well-trained staff.
Nothing beats a backyard pub, I tell you.
There's lots of happy memories of funny things that have happened with friends that involve pubs.
All kinds of pubs. Any pub that has beer and women. It's got to have an atmosphere.
The old sort of pubs, I think, is quite nice.
I enjoy the trivia nights, not normally going out for food though, but yeah, it's more just getting together with the people and having a few drinks.
I like ones where it's a bit different, a bit unique and a bit more comfortable as far as if you want to be quiet you can, but if you want to see a nice band or have a meal or something you can as well. So I guess I know a pub that sort of caters for all needs.
While years ago workers from the local shipyards and building sites filled the pub, now it's inner city residents and a lot more women. But the pub still has its regulars. For example, Andy Kappa-Johnston, who has been coming to this pub for 12 years.
I am now working here, funnily enough, though I was just a regular to start with. You get a wide range of age groups and different varieties of people come here. So that's the big spinner to me, I think. You know, you can save the world and all the rest of it after a few beers. And I do know where the father comes here and the son comes here. Grandpa brings their kid down for a, you know, just a bit of a walk around the hotel, and he has a quick beer. And so there's three generations just there.
And on race one, the pure born naked maiden, representing Gail. Put your hands together!
Gail Coleman has picked the champion cockroach at this year's race. For Australia Day, she likes the big iconic pubs, but otherwise it's her local on Brisbane's west side.
It just supports local bands, that's what we like. They've got great Aussie bands that play great Aussie songs, so we always come here and support the local pubs. All the hits from the 80s that all the young ones listen to, but they're from my era.
The pub is about your mates, the ones you have come in with and the new ones you make.
Cheers!
Karen Zivanovic reporting from the Story Bridge Hotel today, Australia Day, and at that very pub and at many pubs across the country. There are lots of benefits going on to raise money for floods, for bushfires and so on. We're also doing the same here at the ABC. Head to our Help Australia Day webpage. You can get there by visiting the Australia Talks website at abc.net.au/rn/AustraliaTalks, and that will show you how you can help by donating money or donating your time to organisations like the Red Cross, the Queensland Premier's Flood Appeal, the Perth Lord Mayor's Relief Fund, Volunteer Victoria and Volunteer Queensland, and in fact all of the volunteer organisations, just to name a few. Head to that website and help out if you can. Tom Maguire, your family's been in the pub game for, I understand, around a century.
A bit over, just a tad over.
Incredible. You must have seen a lot of changes to the types of entertainment that's provided by pubs these days.
Yeah, well, it's become more varied. From, you know, years ago, it would be the bands, which are still quite current out there.
Mm.
But now you've got sport on TV, as you mentioned before, various things that you may not have on pay TV.
Big screen.
They've got that. Mm. Their trivia nights are still out there in force, believe it or not. The AHA did a survey 18 months ago over the hotel industry throughout Australia, and the figure that's in front of me, that they hosted 71,500 trivia nights each year.
So it's still an enduring attraction at the local pub.
So horses for courses. Some people like it, some people don't.
Karaoke?
Same thing. Mm. Like in some of the pubs that we operate, karaoke is fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just the way that the cookie crumbles.
Charles Pickett, the big change, and the change that I think it's fair to say many people have been bemoaning is the introduction of pokies to pubs. Has that been a good development?
Most people would be rather sceptical on that one. I mean, the situation in the 80s and 90s, the pub industry was pretty much out on its feet then. And so pokies were one of the things that were, you know, put up as a salvation. Fortunately, they weren't the only thing going. There were quite a lot of publicans, you know, who started doing the sort of things that Tom's been talking about. Yeah, look, pokies, what can I say? I don't think they belong in hotels. And I mean, you know, in New South Wales we're used to them. You know, we're more tolerant of them than other states are. But I still, it really did cause a lot of opposition. A lot of people feel very uncomfortable about it.
Well, Sydney traditionally had, I recall, growing up in Melbourne, when you went to Sydney, there were a few pokies in the pub. You'd maybe buy a round of beers, have a few coins, put them in the machines on the way back to taking your drinks to your group.
They might have been the old style ones that weren't exactly like the poker machines you had in clubs. But if, you know, gambling and pubs are something that go back a long way. I mean, of course, the betting used to be a huge industry.
Mm.
You know, largely centered on pubs. I mean, there was a lot more money. Used to be bet on pubs than used to be bet actually at the races right up until the 60s when they introduced the TAB, which, of course, you can now bet with the approved government monopoly in pubs.
Mm.
A lot of people think the old SP might have been better, giving you better odds. You know, it's that sort of thing. People want to do a lot of things in hotels, and gambling is one of them.
Mm.
You know, that have a lot of not necessarily good social outcomes, etc., and also threaten other people's forms of gambling or their
I was just thinking it was, I think, the Australian band The Whitlams who wrote a song about the pokies and what they were doing
to
Australian hotels. And Tanya Luckins, I'll bring you in on this, because it has been suggested that it's been the arrival of the pokies that's led to the death of another very distinctive part of Australian pub life, that of the pub rock scene.
Yeah, a lot of people think that, and I don't think they're that far off the mark, quite frankly. When you think about it, that the dining room was where bands often played. It was a simple setup, you know, on the stage, off you go. The dining room then became the pokies room. Where did bands play? Well, they didn't have a pub to play in. So a lot of the smaller pubs lost their venue as a band place. It did affect a lot of bands, and not only the pub rock, but a lot of 60-40 bands too. You know, the Saturday night dance stopped.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of dancers stopped. All those types of things changed when pokies came in. And I'm talking perhaps, say, from a Melbourne perspective, because that's what I'm most familiar with. And even the bigger pubs, like out in the suburbs, changed their big disco rooms, their big function rooms, into pokies rooms. And so you lost the entertainment, and that became pokies. And I think that's what upset a lot of people. The pub lost its entertainment focus.
Tom Maguire, I think you would dispute that view of how pokies have squeezed live music out of pubs?
Yeah, well, that survey that the AHA did 18 months ago showed, and the way that it was done by one of the big accountancy firms, so it was all hunky-dory there. They looked at over 1,100 pubs throughout Australia, some with gaming and some without. And those with gaming had more live bands, because they could afford to do it.
Mm.
It's a bit of a perception there. I can see how that perception, you know, is there. But in fact, in a lot of cases, it is incorrect. I can't talk about the Melbourne scene, but if you take Queensland, for instance, in some of the hotels that we operate, we've got very large entertainment rooms.
Mm.
Can hold 1,500 odd people. The fact is that we're only allowed 40 machines in Queensland, so I'm not going to get rid of it. Mm. 40 machines wouldn't be there. But I can understand Tanya's side of it there. But a lot of it is perception, and when you really come down with the facts, don't really bear it out.
Well, Charles made the point that, you know, a lot of pubs were on the ropes, really, before the introduction of pokies was allowed. Was that the case with your pubs?
Yeah, definitely, because what had happened was the population was leaving us mainly to go to the club area, which did have poker machines, and they came on like a boat with a wet sail, because they could then do the renovations and all the bits and pieces, and the hotels were sort of licking the paint off the wall. The figures out of that survey also showed that out of the hotels that did have pokie machines, 90% did do refurbs very, very quickly.
Mm.
And so that did make a big plus for us to get back on our feet and to go through. The trick in the whole thing is that you can't rely on the machines. Where some people, and in some states, and my own as well, and obviously in Melbourne and Sydney, have gone through and said pokies are the salvation. They aren't the salvation. They are just one facet of what we can operate, and don't forget the customer as he comes through the door.
Tom Maguire is a publican and the Queensland Hotels Association president. Tanya Luckins is a historian with the Australia Centre at the University of Melbourne and co-author of The Australian Pub, and Charles Pickett is a curator at the Powerhouse Museum in Ultimo. You're listening to Australia Talks on ABC Radio National with me, Paul Barclay, and we're talking about the role of the Australian pub and how it's changed over the years. 1300 22 55 76 is the number. Give us a call or post your views online. Let's head to the west and Roxanne. Hi, Roxanne.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Whereabouts from WA are you from?
Well, I'm 4 hours above Perth, Geraldton, and I own a little tavern that's 105 years old. It was originally a community hall.
Oh, well.
It's been a tavern for the last 25 years. I've had it for five.
So you're a publican, and so how do you see the role of the local pub?
Well, we are in a semi-rural area, and we find that it is part of the community and part of what makes the place feel unique is that it still has a country feel, yet we're 15 minutes from a regional city.
Mm, yeah. So is it a community meeting place, would you say?
Absolutely. We have tried to diversify because we're competing with most of the stuff that's in town, in the regional city. So we have things like families, it being a family tavern, and promoting the fact that, you know, unlike how it used to be in the past, where it used to be a place that only you'd go as a robust male in from the farm, which we do have that in the afternoons, but we promote a dining experience that's part of the family being welcomed throughout the whole place.
Yeah.
But one of the things I wanted to mention is that I found as a publican the last 5 years that there's a lot of opposition to being a female publican from other publicans rather than from the general public. And my biggest hurdle has been being accepted by other publicans. And I think that it's a very good thing in the bar having a female publican as the licensee, because usually the person that's had a bellyful doesn't want to take on me.
Yeah.
But, it has a very good effect in the overall picture of the tavern.
Mm. Thanks a lot, Roxanne. Good to hear from you. Colin in Victoria is next. Hi, Colin.
G'day, Paul. How are you?
Very well. I think you had a particular pub you wanted to talk about.
Notting Hill. And I hope your guest there, Tanya, knows this one. It's Monash University area.
The Knot.
I do know it. The Knot, yep.
Yep.
And the dear old lady just passed away last year, and she would not open that pub on a Sunday.
Really?
She would not open it because that was her... the theory was it was Sunday was a family day, and there was no pokies.
Gee, I've got to say, in my student years, I have to confess, Colin, I had a few misspent days at the Knot with some friends who were students at Monash.
Yes. Great pub. One of the most, in their drive-through, that was it had the best sales. But no pokies, just a great, great pub. Not that I'm a uni person. I was a tradie. I'm a tradie.
Yep. But good memories, obviously, Colin.
Great memories, and I think I heard on the Radio National that John Singleton is going to... Well, he has bought up a lot of pubs in Sydney and going to change them back to the old pubs, not these big money spinners anymore.
OK, thanks, Colin. Let's go to Paul in Perth, who wants to go back to the 70s. Hi, Paul.
Oh, hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, very well. If you can speak up, actually, it is a bit echoey.
Yeah, OK now?
Yeah, good.
I used to go to an inner city tavern in Perth in the mid, say around 77.
And
I'm not a pub person by any means, or drink very little beer, but I used to, it was a case of either going there or staying home. But well, what I remember back then was that in 75 the Family Law Court came out, and of course what you had was a lot of men and women who had just come out of a marriage, and there was just... I met an incredible number of women there. Well, obviously there were a lot of men there as well. Really nice women that were swelling the numbers, and I noticed it very much being the time that it was.
You're suggesting they became pick-up joints?
No, I'm not suggesting that at all.
No,
I'm not suggesting that.
But
at all.
But just places where people met.
Yes, but I mean, more often than not, you meet single people. But that was what came about then. They were very nice people, the ones that I met. But it was just something that I noticed.
Yeah, that is interesting. So, all of a sudden, they weren't no longer in a relationship.
And males likewise.
Yep.
But that was just something that I noticed at the time. I mean, obviously, it wouldn't be.
No, it's an interesting sort of I suppose historical point to make, Paul. Yes. Thanks. I want to go to Warrego and Dan before I come back to our guests. Hi, Dan.
Ah, hello.
Hi.
You've been talking about the changes that have happened to pubs and the way pubs have been run and so on.
Mm.
And one of the things that's not been mentioned, I'm kind of surprised about it, is that in the late 1970s, I can't remember the exact year, late 1960s, sorry, when the drinking age was changed from 21 to 18.
Mm.
And that had a pretty big effect on pubs, not only in terms of of the numbers of people that could come, all of a sudden the, you know, the potential customer base, you know, increased by an enormous number. But at the same time, the kind of entertainment that these people were looking for was quite different.
I can't recall actually. Do you know when that was that the drinking age was 21?
It would have been pretty close to 1969, either 1968 or 1969.
Yeah. Oh, that is interesting. It's a good point to make, yeah. Dan. Sorry, but we haven't. But that's why it's good to have people like yourself ringing up to introduce these ideas into the discussion. Thanks very much for calling. I just wanted to pick up actually Tom Maguire on our caller Roxanne, the publican, who was pointing toward how. I think she was saying that, you know, she wants to get families to come into her pub. It's a very important part of the local community. She talked about food. How important's food become in pubs?
Enormously important. If you look at traditionally alcohol consumption in Australia per head from the late 70s, mid-70s, we were doing, say, 12.5 litres of alcohol per head. We're now down to a little under 10. So we're not selling the alcohol like we used to, so we've got to find other markets. And one of the big attractants is food. And for years, the industry... Melbourne and Sydney, I think, were the first cities, or Victoria and New South Wales, got onto it a lot more quickly than we did up here. But worked out that if you do food and you do food well, the customers will come. And I know... From our experience, when we do renovate and concentrate on the food, we attract people who have been living near that pub for a long time who had never come in. And so, once again, the quality of the food trade, of the offerings that we're making are very high. The value is very, very good. And in the last 2 years with the GFC, hotel food sales have been the one... big noticeable increase over Australia. Everybody, all of my fellow hotel keepers that I talk to say food, food, food.
Interesting. Charles Pickett, I want to talk a bit about how pubs have changed physically over the years. In a lot of the towns and cities in Australia, particularly some of the country towns, you can really track in a way the wealth of some of those towns, maybe through the primary production there, or maybe it was a gold town, because the pubs are often some of the most imposing and impressive buildings in those towns. How did we come to have such big, impressive pubs in Australia?
Yeah, I've been to a lot of towns where the pub seems to be the only brick building in town. Look, there are a number of reasons. Partly because they are an incredibly important part of many country towns, but probably the most important reason was the old tied house system, where in basically every state you had one or perhaps two big brewing companies who pretty much had a monopoly. Carlton in Victoria, Tooth & Co. in New South Wales, etc. And, you know, they basically bought up a lot of the hotels or had other arrangements with publicans, and they put a huge amount of money into hotels because, after all, that's where the vast majority of their products were being consumed. You know, the bottle trade was quite small in those days. And that's really been the basis of a huge hotel building industry that really kicked off, in the late 1800s, when hotels tended to be more residential than they were later on. And then after 6 o'clock closing came in, you needed big bars on street level, etc. And so, you know, architecturally and socially, hotels became real landmarks, and they still are. You know, they're often the largest and most interesting buildings.
And the pub owners were prepared to invest rather heavily in making their buildings
look
impressive.
Well, particularly,
too.
You know, you had the breweries putting money into them big time, particularly in the first half of the last century, and a lot of those buildings are still with us, of course. A lot of them are no longer pubs anymore, but they're used for all sorts of things. So there's sort of a whole sort of history of architecture, if you like.
How much was that to do with the breweries funding these pubs to fight off the what was fairly strong temperance movement historically?
Well, their attitude was that pubs were very much looked down at, and In the early part of the 20th century, when the temperance movement was at its peak, though governments were busily putting old-style pubs, small pubs, you know, out of business. And, you know, to some extent this played into the brewers' hands because, you know, they could build pubs that, you know, were bigger, you know, had bigger bars. You know, I mean, a lot of the bars built in the 20s and 30s were just enormous. You could barely see down the other end. Mm. You know, they were very much designed for the 6 o'clock swill. So, yeah, of course, it was very much, if you like, an unholy alliance between the wowsers and the brewers in that time. And the brick-and-mortar results are still with us.
I was going to ask you, Tom Maguire, how we got from the centrally located small pub on the corner, like the English pub, I suppose, to the big suburban beer barns that I think started to spring up in Australia of 50s, 60s, yeah, and 70s.
Well, it was a lot of it, once again from a Queensland perspective, was government legislation. We built some pubs in the early 80s, and so what's that, 25 years ago? And the minimum requirement was that you had to have 5 acres of land.
God.
And then, so you got your 5 acres and you tended for the hotel. And then the bar, for every metre of counter space you had, you had to have so many car parks, and there was this ratio, so it might have been 10 car parks per metre in the public bar, but it dropped down to 5 in the private bar and 2 in the dining room.
Because these big beer barns had huge car parks, some of them.
Oh, yeah. And as time has evolved, those places, which they're probably out in the outskirts,
yeah,
because that's the only place where you get the 5 acres, the cities now have spread out, and that land content has become very, very valuable, and therefore that's been now diversified into shopping centres or more residential hotels or attachments to our hotels.
Well, there's that and the fact that they've been able to utilise that land. But secondly, the big thing that changed was the introduction of random breath testing in, I think, the 70s, yeah, where in the past people would, let's face it, people would drive to pubs. They'd often get plastered and they'd drive home, take the punt.
You're the exception to the rule if you didn't.
That's right. And that all changed with random breath testing. How much of a hit did pubs take?
They took a severe hit. You know, and it was it probably lasted for 3 to 4 years for us to get our head around how to handle it, and it was the fact that people just had to learn that they could still come to the pub. That's when low alcohol beer started to come in. You know, the various ones there that the alcoholic content started to come down, and that was a way that you could still have 3 or 4 or 5 beers, but consume less alcohol.
And now you've got, I suppose, a similar development with the bans on cigarette smoking as well. A lot of people who go to pubs like to have a smoke. They can't smoke indoors. Is that also having an effect on patronage? Or can people go outside and have a smoke?
No, they can go outside. Queensland and I think a lot of the other states forewarned us, the industry, that this was going to happen. So we were able to plan and do our renovations to put in these outside areas. So often enough you drive by some pubs and think it's doing a booming trade because everybody's outside, but there's nobody inside. Mm. But the fact is it has opened up a whole lot of opportunities, especially in a climate like Queensland.
Mm. Tanya Luckins, you're in Melbourne, where I suppose a lot of the changes took place that affected pubs. I mentioned earlier the introduction of the more European style of drinking in Melbourne cafes. Think in the 80s, where you could go along to a cafe and have a glass of wine or two. And now we're seeing the introduction of the small bar movement across Australia, including in Queensland, and the small laneway bars that Melbourne has become famous for. How is that changing the face of the pub?
Well, I think those Neuenhausen reforms, which you refer to, which came in about 1990, were really quite remarkable because they were a major challenge to the pub as it was.
The pubs didn't like it, did they?
They did not, no, because it meant that not only could restaurants serve alcohol, but a bar could without food as well. And so, as you said before, you had a range of places where people could just go and obtain a quick drink if they wanted to, or other sorts of refreshments like coffee. And so the cafe, the restaurant and the pub all became blurred. And you could, and not only were they blurred, but you could go to different places to have these different kinds of things. And so the breakdown between a pub and a restaurant was no longer there. Mm. Then more recently, as you've said, the small bar and the pub in the hole, the bar in the holes become quite a popular thing too.
So in a way, pubs have had to fight to reclaim a space, in a way, to figure out what they're good at as distinct from the small wine bar, which often they can't compete with.
Well, it's interesting. A lot of pubs actually do look more like cafes now in Melbourne. And they don't just call themselves hotels, they call themselves bars and cafes. They retain the key name, but they call themselves, rather than hotel, a pub, or a cafe, and so on. And again, as we've said, they're becoming much better known for their food, gastropubs.
Mm. Yeah, very true. Charles Luckins, I'm wondering whether... Charles Pickett, I'm wondering whether... I wonder whether country pubs have been a bit immune to these changes that... the city pubs have faced over the years?
Oh, look, I think to some extent a lot of country pubs were a bit ahead of us in the city in that, you know, at least you've always been able to get a meal out there at a hotel, which I can tell you was a pretty difficult thing at your average city pub for a long time. The sort of unfortunate thing as far as rural pubs are concerned in recent years, of course, the value of licences has gone up so much with pokies, etc. And a lot of those pubs, you know, just basically have had their licences taken away from them. As a result, a lot of small towns have lost their pub, which is, a really bad side effect of, if you like, the rebirth of pubs in recent times.
I should just point out, we've got a post from someone who's taking issue with the fact that food's improved at pubs. This unnamed online poster has said that overpriced food no longer goes to pubs. They're run by faceless corporations, not families. So, well, there's your two bobs worth. Charles Pickett, you got a local pub that you go to?
I go to mainly pubs near work. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. There's one just up the road here in Ultimo, because the powerhouse is just next door to the ABC.
Yep.
A place called The Clare, which is an old 1930s pub, and I'm very partial to 30s pubs. Mm. It's sort of been taken over very much as a student pub. It's still got all the old 1930s decor, and the contents of various second-hand furniture stores have been put in the bar, lounges, etc. And it's just a really nice, relaxed place. It has no food. Mm. That's not why you go there.
It's a pub,
basically. And it's just a great after-work.
I won't ask Tom McGuire to name his favourite pub because he'll be doing some shameless plugging of his own, I'm sure. But, Tanya, I'll ask you, do you have a local?
I do indeed. It's one of those Irish pubs, The Quiet Man in Kensington. And it serves all comers. It's got live bands, it's got a public bar, it has really nice food, live music. You can just drop in and pick up an instrument and play. It's got an outside beer garden. So it serves just about everyone, really. It's one of those pubs that's really managed to reinvent itself after the old pub, the male pub years.
Okay, I'm working up a thirst now. I should make the point to anyone listening, if you do like a drink, do so responsibly, especially Australia Day. Plenty of you having a drink, but make sure that you are sensible. And speaking of Australia Day, a reminder again that it's Help Australia Day here on the ABC. Head to our website, abc.net.au/rn/Australia Talks, and you can find out how to help those people affected by floods, fires in Victoria, Queensland, New South Wales, Western Australia, all over the country, people in need of your help. And you can find out how you can help, both with your time and your money, by heading to the website. Please give them a hand. Thanks to Tanya Luckins, whose book, The Australian Pub, is out and about. She's from the Australia Centre at the University of Melbourne. Thanks to Charles Pickett from the Powerhouse Museum in Ultimo and publican Tom McGuire. I'm back with you again tomorrow on Australia Talks, and we'll be talking about, well, we'll be talking to, hearing from Ethan Nadelman about how our drug policies basically need to be improved. And, well, he's talking about how certain drugs need to be legalised. That's coming up on Big Ideas tomorrow. I'll speak to you then.
C sci-fi has had an enormous impact on popular culture, technology and science, from Jules Verne to the smartphone. But in a world of rapid technological change, is science fiction losing its ability to predict, inspire and shape the real world? Find out with me, Anthony Fennell, as we explore the impact of science fiction. That's Future Tense, and you can download or stream this program from the Radio National website.